My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
A Kings Island Gold Pass is your ticket to unlimited visits this year and all through 2025. Make the park your own with access to 2 years of tricks and treats, Halloween Haunt, and Winterfest. Plus an expanded Soak City featuring the all-new dual racing water coaster River Racers coming in 2025. All for our lowest price of the season. Just 10 payments of $9 after initial payment plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry, price goes up September 3rd. Get your gold pass at visitkingsisland.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rob Doster is the founder of Field of 68. Obviously, maybe he breathed a sigh of relief when the news came down earlier this week that there would be no tournament expansion for more reasons than one. Nice enough to join us now. Rob, what's up, man?
Yeah, you're right. I didn't have to go out and get some new, like, IP figured out. I didn't have to rebrand all of my merch. We didn't have to think about, like, the Field of 72 Twitter account or anything like that. It was a sigh of relief. Wasn't something that I was complaining about, I'll tell you that much.
But let me ask you this, though. Like, it's coming, right? I mean, inevitably, it's coming. So shouldn't you, just, like, be just reserving those, in like, now to make sure you don't get beat later?
Yeah, most of them are. We have a bunch of them. Some of them, we were sniped before all that happened.
Damn.
But we've thought ahead on this a little bit, John. Maybe not soon enough. But, you know, I will say this. The most frustrating thing to me, and this goes way, way back, when it comes to covering college athletics, when it comes to being a fan of college athletics, is that it just feels like the people that make the decisions in this sport and college football are not actually college sports fans. Because I challenge you, John, go find one college basketball fan, college basketball junkie, that thinks it's a good idea to go to 72 teams or 76 teams or 80 teams or 96 or whatever it would end up being, right? Go to one real fan and ask them if they think it's a good idea for UCLA to be in the same conference as Rutgers, right? Go find one person that is happy that the Pac-12 no longer exists, that Arizona is in the Big 12, that Texas and Oklahoma are no longer in the Big 12. It's just the people that make all of the decisions that impact the sport that we all love so much, probably too much, it feels like they're investment bankers. They're guys that sit there and stare at spreadsheets. They're people that are like, this is how I can increase the returns by 2.7%. on what we have coming into these universities, because this will allow their endowment to go from $1 billion to $1.1 billion, and everyone's going to be happy to be able to sit back and make money off of this. It's the most frustrating thing on the planet, but, I mean, it is what it is. It ain't going to change when they bring private equity into college athletics.
I was trying to think of the last thing, the last time, you know, something like for the fans actually happened in college sports. I mean, I guess for the people will be excited about college football playoff expansion, but then like the nature of that is it's probably going to get too big. You know, like it's not, you know, sort of once you take the top off, it's kind of hard to close the lid again. You know, and so it's 12 today, but then it's going to be 16, and it's going to be 24, and they'd be like, well, there are too many teams now. The regular season is, you know, but I mean, again, that's, you know, people get greedy, man. You know, because everybody's going to see the television numbers. I mean, it's why the tournament, you know, it's why they want to expand, man, because it does freaking well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people love knockout competitions, right? People love the drama of having one game with everything on the line. People love the opportunity to be able to see a fairly Dickinson upset, the National Player of the Year and the number one team in America, right? They love the chance to see St. Peter's make a run, just like they're going to be able to love a chance to see, like, I don't know, a Boise State come in as a 12 seed in the college football playoff and, you know, pick off a five, pick off a four, and then get a shot at, like, Alabama as number one seed. Like, I understand we want to see the big matchups. I understand we want to see the juggernauts. But, like, what college basketball has figured out and has found out thus far a way to avoid ruining is the underdog story is the best thing when it comes to a sport where it's not built around the superstars, right? Like, the NBA is built around LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and now Nikola Jokic and Giannis and this next crop of upcoming great players like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Luka and Jason Tatum and all these guys. Like, it's a stars league. Major League Baseball is a stars league. There's a reason why, like, Bryce Harper and Shohei and Aaron Judge and all of these dudes are literally getting paid, like, half a billion with contracts that are 13, 14 years long, right? It's a stars league. Stars pay the bills in those leagues. It's not like that in college football. It's not like that in college basketball. Like, if you're a casual, you're not just tuning in because it's like, oh, I heard that Alabama's got this great, great wide receiver that I need to go watch, right? Like, that's not how it works in college athletics. In college athletics, you're looking for the great storyline and maybe once in a while a great matchup. And if you go back and look at the viewership numbers on all of these NCAA tournament games, like St. Peter's making a run to the Elite Eight, that's the best viewed basketball game in like the 2020s, right? More than the NBA, more than anything else, more than NBA Finals games. Like it was those games. It was the underdog. It was the David against the Goliath having a chance to be able to make a run. Like it works for college basketball.
Yeah,
right. I'll be very curious to see how that works for college football and if there's even a chance for someone like that to be able to sneak their way in and luck box their way into a national championship game appearance.
Yeah, it feels like not, you know, just because, like, with the nature of basketball is that, like, you can get lucky, right? Like, you can go nuclear from three, or you can have a team just not make anything from three, and it could sort of change. You know, with football, it's a little less. I mean, it's a little your exposure to luck, is, I think, is a little less. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the format does indeed shake out. Before we get to the rest of college basketball, I wanted to ask you specifically because here in Memphis, it's just been Zach Edey mania since he debuted. And obviously, you know, because I'm doing work with Field of 68, I'm watching national college basketball. Obviously, it's what you do all day, every day. You knew what kind of player the Grizzlies were getting in Zach Edey. So it must have come as no surprise to you to see what he did in his first summer league, in his first NBA action, 14-15. Coming up with the rebound, tip in over two guys. It must have come as no surprise to you as someone who's watched a lot of Zach Edey over his career.
You know, I don't think I would say it's no surprise, but it is the way that I would phrase it, it felt good that actually happened, right? Like, I think that having Zach Edey, a guy that was the most dominant player that we've seen in college basketball since I've been doing this for 15 years, right? Probably the most dominant player since, like, what, Tyler Hansbrough? Maybe you even got to go back to, like, I don't even know, Ralph Sampson, back-to-back National Player of the Year, 25-13 this past season. Like, a guy that got to the point where everyone outside of Purdue hated him because he was just too dominant and too good. And to be able to see him go to the next level and be able to have that same kind of an impact, it kind of justifies how good he was at the college level, right? And the other part of it is I want him to do well. And I know a lot of people, everybody in Memphis wants him to do well, but I want him to do well because, one, he's a great kid. Two, he's an incredible story. Like, the dude didn't pick up a basketball until he was, like, 15 years old. He wanted to be a pitcher, and then it's like, yeah, dude, look, you're 7'4". Maybe, just maybe, you should go try to find a way to be a basketball player. You ain't going to be a pitcher. Your strike zone is massive. You're never going to play first base. It is what it is. Go play basketball. And he's put in the work. He's put in the effort. And I think the biggest thing, John, more than anything else, is that he's going to prove to a lot of people that, like, their concerns about what he can be defensively is going to be a little bit overrated. He's more mobile than people give him credit for. He takes up so much damn space that he doesn't have to be all that mobile to be able to play a little bit of drop coverage. And the biggest thing is just, like, everybody in Summer League is basically college stars from the last couple of years, right? Guys that he absolutely punished. You talk to anyone that saw his workouts during the NBA draft process, and he absolutely manhandled people, right? It was like watching me play one-on-one against my son is kind of the reference that people were saying watching him grow up in some of these workouts. So it's no surprise to me that he's able to do this in Summer League, right? It's not going to be a surprise to me that he is able to be productive at the NBA level. I think what is going to determine whether or not, like, he ends up being a pro that is good enough to justify being the number nine pick and a guy that, like, gets anywhere near what his production was as a collegiate player is what happens when you get in the playoff series, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can see Rudy Gobert is, what, one of the best defensive centers that you're going to find, right? Like, a throwback. If you are a big 7'2", not Wemby or Kevin Durant kind of 7-footer, like, you want to be Rudy Gobert defensively. And even he kind of gets played off the floor a little bit during some NBA playoff series where you get the best players in the world, the best coaches in the world trying to figure out how to exploit a mismatch. And, you know, I don't – it's very hard for me to sit here and say, yeah, you know what, Zach Edey is going to be better than Rudy Gobert when it comes to avoiding getting targeted in mismatches. So that, to me, that'll determine what his ceiling is as a player. But the idea that a dude that averaged 25 and 13 basically for two consecutive seasons at the highest level of college basketball wasn't going to be productive in Summer League, like, did people really not expect that? Are you really surprised that he was able to get 15 rebounds against a bunch of guys that are like 6'9" Euro players? Come on, what are we talking?
Well, there was, I mean, there was, you know, Walker Kessler. Walker Kessler was out there, and I think that was the thing about it that you want to sort of extrapolate something out of that and extract something from that, because I would agree with you, if it was just against a bunch of randoms and, you know, second round picks, I'd say, you know, like, of course he was going to do that. But because it was against the second leading shot blocker in the NBA and Walker Kessler, who's also 7'2", like, okay. That might actually mean something, right? Like, that may actually be a sign of things to come if he can do this against, you know, relevant, credible basketball players in Summer League.
Yeah, look, he's going to produce, right? Like, he's going to find a way to be able to, I don't know, what did Jonas Valanciunas average when he was there? Somewhere in that name. Like, he's kind of Jonas Valanciunas, a little bit bigger, doesn't have as good of a beard, probably has better hair. Right, but it's that same kind of player where you're big and you're physical and you can overwhelm guys, and maybe it's not going to work in every single matchup, but there's going to be nights where you are the advantage matchup that Memphis is going to have. And, oh, by the way, like, imagine all of these guards. Ja Morant is going to love Zach Edey because he is going to get open off of every single screen that Zach Edey sends. And by the way, you got a dude rolling to the rim that's 7'4" that nobody can get around, where you can put it up above the square and he can go get it. So Ja Morant is going to love Zach Edey. And honestly, based off, like, his Instagram stories, I think he already does. I think he figured that out, like, the night of the draft.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, Jonas averaged, you know, 15. Well, I'm going to go with, like, the years that Ja. He was here for 3 years, 1 year without, 2 years with. The 2 years he had Ja, Jonas averaged, like, 15.5 a game. Basically 15 and 12. You don't think Edey's going to average that, do you?
I would not put that past him to be able to get there. Maybe not year one.
Right.
But I think that, like, by the end of maybe year two, year three, you might be getting closer to those numbers. But I've also been bullish on Zach Edey the whole way. This is going to sound a little bit ridiculous, but I compared him – I would compare him with Zion and Chet Holmgren in the sense that we haven't seen a dude with those physical features and those physical traits and that, like, build – ever come through that has been as productive as he was, right? My biggest question with Zion, and there was more going from high school to college than college to the NBA, was how can you have, like, a 6'6" bowling ball? We've never seen a dude that's built like that have success at the college level, which is why, like, I think a lot of people have those questions too, which is why he was, like, number five, and I think he was behind R.J. Barrett in his draft class. Go look at the 2019 recruiting class, and you'd be like, how was that dude above Zion Williamson? And then he got in college, it was like, oh, yeah, you know what? It doesn't matter because he's just a level above everybody else. When Chet Holmgren was drafted, the question was, how can a dude that's 7'1" and as skinny as he is be able to play a center role in the NBA? And then it just turns out, like, well, he's got the skills, he's got the toughness, he's got the heart, like, he's got all the everything else. And, oh, by the way, he also happens to be 7'1" and be able to make threes and play on the perimeter a little bit. And it just works because you haven't seen something like that before just doesn't mean it doesn't work, if that makes sense. I'm kind of like that with Zach Edey, where we've never seen a 7'5" dude with his wingspan and his size and his endurance and his mobility come into the NBA with the level of production that he put together. And oh, by the way, like, John, he's still on the upward trajectory.
Yeah.
Like, look what he was from his sophomore year to his junior year to his senior year. Like, he hasn't stopped getting better.
That's right.
The dude works his ass off. He is. People in Memphis are going to love him because, like, the whole, like, the gritty, the tough, the physicality, people are going to kind of look at who he is and look at the way that he looks and just kind of make assumptions about him because he's a little bit quiet and, you know, he's Canadian and all this other stuff, right?
Yep.
But the dude is tough. There's a mean streak. He is unbelievably competitive, and he puts in the work, man. Like, he's, what is it, the grindhouse down there? Like, he's going to fit perfectly in that culture, I promise you.
Yeah, no, I think so. We're talking to Rob Doster, founder of Field of 68. Obviously, that's where you can find me during the college basketball season on After Dark. Great stuff. It's the best college basketball media network out there that cares about the product and that puts out consistently great stuff. Let's talk a little college basketball. We have some videos that are going to be coming out here, you know, over the course of the summer. And we
I got some breaking news for you, John.
What's that?
You know what's coming out on Tuesday?
What's that?
Your Memphis offseason grades.
Well, we already talked about that, right? We talked about Memphis off, you know, my Memphis offseason grade. It is my grade, but it is not my Memphis at the moment. As you know, I'm identifying as a Razorback this year. But when you assess this Memphis team and what they've done, you know, from the national perspective, and I encourage people to watch the video as well because I think you said some really good stuff. Is this a team that you feel like will be the favorite, the picked favorite in the AAC? Like, how do you sort of handicap what Penny has done with this roster?
Well, the favorite in the AAC is, like, yes, Memphis should be the favorite in the AAC every single year. They're Memphis, right? There's a level of support. There is a level of branding that they have. Maybe that's the wrong word, but it's Memphis, man. That is a basketball program in the American that should, year in and year out, be like a top 30, 35 team at minimum, with a couple years where they got a top 10 team sprinkled in there. Now, when you have to rebuild everything, when you have to blow it all up, and frankly, we talked about this on that video. Like, I don't know if I necessarily want to say that Penny is wrong for blowing it all up, because there are some things that very clearly needed to change about the way that roster was put together. And obviously, you could see by the way that the season ended, like, it was not working in that locker room. There was probably a little bit of jealousy, probably a little bit of egos being hurt, but it wasn't working though. So he's blowing it all up. And it is not an easy thing to do, to have, 11, 12 new guys come in and find a way to be able to win, especially when you didn't go out and get, like, how many guys in there are do you look at and say, yeah, they'll play in the NBA? How many guys do you look at there and say, oh, yeah, without a doubt, that dude is going to be a first-team all-AAC player? How many guys on that team can you look at and say they got a real chance, if things go well, to find a way to be able to make a professional career in the NBA? Like, it just... it's not the kind of roster that is put together by the likes of, I would say Kentucky did the same kind of thing, and their roster is better. Louisville did the same thing, and their roster is better. You struck out on some of the biggest names that you went after. So I think it's going to be tough for them. If they got David Jones back, right? Like, that, to me, that's the biggest thing, is you brought in some good guards. One really good, interesting, but really good one in P.J. Haggerty, right? You got a couple players that can be role guys. You got a couple big guys that can do different things. Like, you can have your defensive team with Musa Cisse out there. You can have your offensive team with Dane Danger out there. So, it's not a total wash, but you don't have a big wing, and you don't have a go-to guy, and you don't have a star. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is a year where, you know, I think there should be some pressure on Penny here. And the people that have listened to my appearances on your show, John, we'll know this, but I've been a Penny supporter. Like, I think that he did a really, really good job, an underrated job, an underappreciated job over the course of, like, the first, five and a half, this is year seven, right? Yeah, the first 5.5 years that he was there. I think last year was a bit of a miss. I think it was a gamble bringing in Naquan Tomlin in the middle of the year and upsetting what was already like a kind of delicate balance when it came to the locker room culture and the role allocation and acceptance that people already had there, right? And I think that bringing him in kind of threw off the balance, and I think that's about why you saw the end of the season go the way that did for Memphis. But before, like every year before that, the COVID year, right, they were better than an NIT team. They were a top 30 team in America that kind of had some fluky stuff with last-second shots against Houston and some roster scheduling, COVID cancellations that probably didn't go in their favor. They deserve to be a tournament team that year. Next year, they are a tournament team. And he finds a way to work through the whole Jalen Duren, Amani Bates dynamic, and has a disastrous start, turns it around, and is a couple, five minutes away from beating Gonzaga in the second round of the tournament. Year after that, they're a bad call away from picking off an FAU team where if they beat them, they get FDU, Fairleigh Dickinson, in the second round of the tournament to make it to the Sweet 16, right? They probably win that game, and they probably find a way to get to the Sweet 16. And if Fanny's got a Sweet 16 on his resume, we're having very different conversations about where he is right now. And then last season, it kind of fell off. And then you got to blow it all up, and you're trying to rebuild it. And I mean, frankly, I don't think he did a great job. It's probably not the worst job anyone's ever done, but I don't think he did a very good job rebuilding that roster. And losing David Jones is not a great thing. So this is a big year for him in terms of the perception of what his job is and the amount of pressure that's going to be on him moving forward. Because if you are Memphis, you are coached by Penny, you should be more than like a get one win in 6 years in tournaments kind of a thing. Like,
yeah.
You got to be better than that.
Especially, you know, obviously it's all about your NIL, right? Like that, the one thing you'd say, we had Goodman on the show, a month or so ago, and he said he thinks Memphis, obviously there's no way to necessarily know this, but he thinks Memphis has, top five, top 10 NIL. And then it's just funny. Like it goes back and forth. I'll hear people say Memphis has great NIL. And then I'll hear people say that Memphis has no NIL. Like, there's like nobody seems to agree on how much money Memphis does or doesn't have. But what you can't deny, NIL or not, they've had really good players, right, the last 6 years. And so I think that informs it too. You've had, you in theory, that more should have been done. And I think that's kind of where you have to come at it from.
Yeah, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for a lot of it, but the way that last year played out and the way that this year this roster has come together, like there's no benefit of the doubt for these ones. Like
right.
you had enough talent on last year. You were top 10 for a reason.
Yeah, they were 15-2. You don't make the tournament. That's hard. That's hard too.
And like frankly, like let's be honest, that was probably a little bit inflated because
sure.
You had a couple buzzer beaters,
sure.
Right? Like,
yep.
But you're probably like a top 15, top 20 team in America.
They beat Clemson, right? I mean, Clemson went to the, Elite Eight,
Yeah, like they're a good team, a top 15, 20 kind of a team that probably got a little bit overranked when they had a couple of buzzer beaters go in, right? But that's just the way the college basketball ranking systems work. Nothing wrong with that. That's why we love the sport. And then the bottom completely fell out, though. Like, it doesn't – when you're 15-2 and you get lucky on a couple wins and you also have, like, a win over Clemson and all that other stuff, like
– Exactly.
You're in a position where, like, all you got to do is just do nothing dumb and you find a way to be able to get into the NCAA tournament. And they did a lot of dumb stuff down the end of the season. And I do think that in year six, a lot of that does need to fall onto Penny. And in year seven, with the way that the roster looks right now, that falls on Penny. I'll back him till the cows go with the book. Give me whatever phrase you want to use. I will back him for what happened in the COVID year. I will back him and say he did a really good job in the Jalen Duren season. Right. I will tell everybody that wants to listen that the year when they were, what was the call? It was like a 2.5 seconds left. And there was a jump.
Right. I mean, Memphis had the ball and they wanted the timeout and they had possession, but they called a jump ball. That was the controversy.
Yeah, so if that goes the other way, then they're probably in the Sweet 16 in 2023, right? Like, that's how fine the margins are. I will back Penny for all of that. Last season, no. This season, like, it's on you, man. This is the team that you put together, and then, it's what's that meme? Oh, no, it's the consequences of my actions. And that's kind of what we're looking at right now with Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, it's a huge year. Let me ask you this. 5 years from now, we're going to look back, and we're going to say, which of these teams got the better end of the deal, Arkansas or Kentucky?
In 5 years?
Yep.
I'm gonna say Kentucky.
Wow.
I'm sorry to go against your Razorback.
Yeah, I mean, this is insulting.
I'm gonna say Kentucky. I'm very high on Mark Pope's ability to, like, invigorate that Kentucky fan base. He's one of their own. He's an engaging personality, a really, really great dude, and I think he's a hell of a coach. I think there's a lot of Greg McDermott in the sense that he runs creative offenses and creative sets, and he's going to go out and get guys, and he's going to find a way to be better than what you would expect based off the teams that he has on the floor. He's going to shoot a lot of threes. He's going to be able to establish a culture and have guys there with a better level of continuity than we've seen in recent years with Coach Cal. And to be frank, like, if Cal's going to go all in still, I'm building rosters out of nothing but freshmen. Like, there's only so many Cooper flags out there, right? Like, I don't think that you can do it. Not anymore. Not when everyone's going out there and they're bringing in transfers and you got media eligibility and you got NIL and you got kids coming back instead of, you know, years ago when it was working for Cal, like, if you were projected to have a chance to end up getting, like, an Exhibit 10 contract in the NBA, which gives you, like, 50 grand to go to a training camp, you were gone. You were out of it, right? I'm going to get my 50 grand and figure it out.
Yep.
From there. Like, if you were a top 100 NBA draft prospect, you were out of college basketball. And now, like, we got guys that are projected to get guaranteed money coming back to school. We got Coleman Hawkins saying, I'm not going to go try to be, like, a top 40 pick in the draft. I'm going to go get $2 million from Kansas State, right? So it's a different era, and I just don't see that one and done stuff working for Cal. And I'm not convinced that he's going to buy into this idea that I'm going to go out and get transfers. So I like Pope more at Kentucky than I do, and I do feel like, regardless of who the coach is, if you're betting on Kentucky versus Arkansas, like, bet on Big Blue, man.
Yeah, no question. Last thing before we get you out of here, Cooper Flagg, obviously you mentioned him, and we saw what he did, you know, against the, you know, as part of the select team against the, you know, the big boys there. Do you think he and Duke will be the stars of college basketball? I mean, they're not top three, they're not top five consensus. They're definitely outside of that range. But do you think by the end of it that Cooper Flagg is going to be good enough to keep Duke in there as a, you know, as a contender, or is this just not his year because of the age and everything?
Look, I've been trying to keep my expectations low because of his age. He's going to be 17 years old until, I believe, his birthday is December 21st.
Wow.
If he was 10 days younger, he would not be eligible for the 2025 NBA draft.
Wow. Right?
That is how young he is. He'll be the youngest player in Division I basketball, and I think he'll be probably the youngest player that we've seen in Division I basketball in a long, long, long time. And I'm the sicko that went out and I watched, like, I found the video of the guy that recorded the entire fourth quarter of that scrimmage that he played in against Team USA. I'm the sicko that went and watched the entire scrimmage that he was involved in. Like, he's gotten a lot better. You know, when he blew up on the EYBL last year, he was playing against 16-year-olds. He wasn't playing against 17-year-olds. He was playing against 16-year-olds for a couple of different reasons. Mostly it was because he didn't want to bail on his main team, and the rest of that main team was not good enough to play up a year. And he was, you know, the stuff he was doing looked like he would work against 16-year-olds. Maybe it wouldn't work in the ACC. But, like, his handle's gotten better. His jump shot's gotten way better. He was guarding Drew Holiday 94 feet. He was bringing the ball up and running the point and operating ball screens with Drew Holiday guarding him in that Team USA scrimmage. I'm trying as hard as I can to keep my expectations low, and it ain't working, man. I don't think he's going to put up, like, what did Zion average? 22, 9, 3 assists,
right.
two blocks.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to be that, right? Because he is more of a, as weird as it sounds, and as skilled as he is and as talented as he is, like, the thing he does best is, like, be that connective piece that makes everybody around him better. Like, he's very much I'm going to make the right play. And a lot of times the right play is, like, me taking a three or going to the rim and trying to finish. But, like, he's a willing passer. He's an unselfish defender. Like, he is very, very good at all of, like, the glue guy stuff, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So I think that Duke, one, I think that he's going to have a very, very good year that leads to a lot of winning for Duke. And two, I think what Shire did going out and getting Cyan James, who like might be the most underrated transfer in America. That dude is going to eat a
beat. Yeah, he cooked Memphis. I remember that one. Yeah, he cooked Memphis.
He's 6'6", 225. He looks like a bodybuilder. He can play the point. He can make threes. He can play the wing. Like, he's a stud. You had Mason Gillis, who was a winner and a 3-and-D guy. You had Malik Brown, who was like a do-it-all five-man. You put those three guys on the floor with Cooper Flagg and add Tyrese Proctor. And if Tyrese Proctor, by the way, like, had a better year than I think people realize because of what the expectations were. He got better across the board in every single category last season, playing the same amount of minutes in the year as a freshman. He didn't take a massive leap, but he took a step forward. Take another step forward from Tyrese Proctor. You got those other four guys out there with a bunch of talented freshmen playing roles off the bench. Like, I think Duke's going to be really, really good. And I think it might take a little while to get to their peak, but like by February, Watch out, man. That team is going to be a problem. And Cooper Flagg, if you're going to get sick of a white guy from Duke going out there and getting headlines, like, read all the college basketball stuff you can right now, because by February it's going to be flat.
There's no doubt.
Cooper Flagg, man.
Yep, there is absolutely no doubt about it. Ace, Rob, appreciate the time as always, brother. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, John. Good catching up, man.
Yes, sir. We'll do it again soon. He is Rob Doster, founder of Field of 68. Good stuff there from him. Yeah, Tuesday we'll have the video coming out about Memphis. We did Ole Miss. We did Texas A&M. We did some other schools, and we'll have some more coming for you this year. But, yeah, I think the Memphis fans will definitely want to check that out. We'll come back. Jason and John on Eastern FM, ESPN.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
A Kings Island Gold Pass is your ticket to unlimited visits this year and all through 2025. Make the park your own with access to 2 years of tricks and treats, Halloween Haunt, and Winterfest. Plus an expanded Soak City featuring the all-new dual racing water coaster River Racers coming in 2025. All for our lowest price of the season. Just 10 payments of $9 after initial payment plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry, price goes up September 3rd. Get your Gold Pass at visitkingsisland.com.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Nore Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nore Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nore.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.